Empire of the Suns.
Suns.
Empire of the Suns.
Wet like on book. Wet like on book. Wet like on book.
Arizona Sports presents the Empire of the Suns podcast.
Empire of the Suns.
Hello there, and welcome to the Empire of the Suns podcast. My name is Kellen Olson, joined as always by Kevin Zierman. Hello, Kevin. How are you doing on this Wednesday afternoon?
Oh, just struggling to hit that mute button, even though we've been doing this for a while. It's fun.
I'm the person who is like, what day of the week is it as I prepare to say what day of the week it is? And what time of day is it as I prepare? We're still fully in quarantine space headspaces.
You're on vacation right now and you're doing this, I think. It's what I've
technically a vacation day today on Wednesday. Yeah, after a back-to-back, we got to grab them when we can. Got to use them up again, as we've stated on here before. Suns keep winning, Kevin. To get into it, we are not going to spend much of this podcast talking about the last couple of games. We've been doing that throughout this season because big change from the last couple of seasons where all these games are fairly interesting and worth talking about. We'll briefly hit on the last three we've seen, which are all Suns wins. They play a ho-hum first half against the Wizards on Saturday and then blow the doors off them in the second half. A lot of that was Book coming out in the third quarter and kind of ending the game. I think he had 17 in the third quarter. Houston on Monday, they hit a record, franchise record, 25 threes, including tying the NBA record for the most in a half with 18. Houston kind of claws their way back into the game, but it's this weird Armani Brooks from 32 feet, DJ Wilson step back three nonsense kind of going on in the middle of it too. And then they played Miami last night, and I don't know what I really take away from the Miami game more than, or what even like the main like theme of that Miami game necessarily was. It was the bench's play, of course, but the bench was so incredible that it was sort of like an outlier performance. I think they had 65 points and all those guys just kept making plays over and over again. I think my central thing to take away from these three games and just really like the last couple of weeks has been the play of DeAndre. We've talked about it a little bit, but I wrote this last night, Kevin, and this is where I'll pass it to you. I don't know when it's appropriate for us to feel safe enough to say he's back on track with where he, and the way I'll phrase it like more aggressively, where he should have been heading into this season. But it feels like he's there right now. Like right now he's on that track. And like, of course, like this will, there's a good chance that it will divert at some point because that has been the theme of this season is inconsistency more than ever before. But I think this is the way you put it. Ever since he became a dad, he's been pretty great. And in these last couple of games, especially, it's been what we've wanted to see more, Kevin, which is not 18 shots a game, 15 post touches a game. It's been the offensive glass, defense, doing all the little things. And that's what this team needs in the playoffs more than what we just talked about or what I just mentioned.
Yeah, for me, it's partially just like there's not those blips where he's just not engaged or not doing the right thing. To me, it's really also about just I think he's comfortable within the team fabric and all that stuff. Like you look at what shots he takes, even like a trailer three, I think a couple games ago he took one. It was like a good trailer three to take. Now, obviously he hasn't hit a bunch of those, but just things about knowing what type of shot and when, kind of just knowing his role, not forcing things, making the right passes. I just see him being more comfortable. And I think when he's more comfortable, that's just saying he's gone through the reps enough to start playing more confidently. And then when you start playing more confidently, you start seeing him take, you know, he doesn't waste time when he catches it in the post. When he does get a dump down, he makes an aggressive spin move or takes a couple dribbles, shoulders into a guy, passes out or shoots. So I just think things are kind of coming together with him just from a familiarity standpoint. Like you look at, you know, he's not killing teams with tons of lobs every game, but he's getting his fair share, just like Dario will get his, even though he's not, you know, a real traditional rim roller who's dunking everything. So I just think he's fitting in with the fabric of the team. And that's partially him. That's partially the guys around him. But obviously, you know, I don't know if it's the dad thing, but it's just a maturity thing for sure, at least as a basketball player.
It's also highs and lows. I feel like when he's been at his lows this year, he hasn't been able to just like impact the game through that. Like you mentioned, you've mentioned the snowball effect ever since we started talking about him as a draft prospect. And that has been a thing too much this year, where it feels like he hasn't been impacting the game that much while he's not playing well. And I know that's like a weird way to phrase it, but I think the best way to put it is like on those nights where he's consistently fumbling passes, not just like locked in defensively and just being out of place. We're not getting the offensive rebounding either. We're not getting like the assertive finishing around the rim through that. It hasn't really been like a mixture of that to balance those things out. And I think what you see is that for now, at least, when he avoids those, it's not even that he avoids those mistakes, because in some of these games, he actually starts off poorly, has one of those stretches in the first 2 or 3 minutes where he fumbles a pass or two, misses a couple shots, and then he comes back great anyway. I can't remember which game it was. It might have been the Washington game, might have been the Utah game, where he didn't have a good start and then just played great anyway. And I think this has more of just been a reminder of how impactful he can be defensively, because I've maybe been the biggest person this year around the Suns who has just emphasized that I don't think he's been as good as he was defensively even last year. But I think that the way that he has played in the last month, specifically the first Miami game, the second Miami game as well, he was good. But in the first Miami game, he was outstanding. We saw a lot of it in these last two games as well. Houston and Washington, I thought he was there too. The Jazz game, he was great. And I think it shows that he isn't just solid when he's there defensively. Like, he can be really great on some nights. And that's, again, for a third-year center, and when we were talking about this last year, for a second-year center to be that impactful on just some nights is huge. It's a huge thing. And to see it again this year and see the level of impact he can have on some nights, like, he can be average defensively for 6 out of 10 games, and then 4 out of 10 games he can be really great. And obviously, like, law of averages, that adds up to like a good defensive player. And we're back to getting to that, at least. I think the defense is the part where, for sure, I'm willing to say that he's back on track.
Yeah, and it's interesting because, like, going way back to that Nets game, like, teams really haven't done the "we're just going to attack him on pick and rolls" over and over and over again, because – I mean, it's partially that he's not that bad defensively, and it's partially that the Suns are really good team defense. And I mean, last night was a good example where just the help side stuff is there right now, where I just think teams can't really take on anything and go hard, or at least not that hard, at just exploiting them in any certain way where it's that blatant. So I just think he's in a fine place right now. It's interesting, like, the recent stretch where it's like, if we were doing a pod a year ago and you said, I feel pretty good about DeAndre, I don't know about Mikal though. Like, just to say that is just weird at this point. And I don't think it's a bad thing. Not that Mikal, like, I'm super worried about Mikal. He hasn't just haven't played great of late, but it's just weird that we can say that. And I think that's a good thing for this team looking forward.
Well, it's to what I wrote about in the second part of my, like, preview of the second half of the season, which was the twofold thing with Mikal. It's like, can you ask for even more out of Mikal, as opposed to, like, with DeAndre, just him getting back to what he was? It's like, no, can you ask for Mikal to be like a guy who averages like 17, 18 points per game in the second half of the season? And kind of the opposite of that has happened. And I was talking about it with David Brand from the Associated Press the other night, and just saying how there's like this trait that some guys have in Mikal's role where they are somehow able to get their way to 11, 14, 17 points on any given night, even though they're barely touching the ball. and in that type of role where you're just standing in the corner a lot, you're cutting and you're getting things in transition and stuff. But there are guys who play that role who are still able to get to that like 15 points per game threshold without even having much run for them in the offense. It's just like an innate ability some guys have. It looked like Mikal was on his way to sort of finding that about 20 games, 25 games into the season. And I've talked about it on here before. He just hasn't quite gotten there yet. And I'm glad you brought him up just because it's something to keep an eye on for the last, there's 18 games left in the season now. And just to see if he can sort of get back on track, because I think for them to win, when we start talking about in the main part of this podcast, like looking at potential playoff opponents, there is going to be a second round series. Whoever they play in the second round, they're going to need someone like him to step up a lot. And it'll be interesting to see if he's able to do that and how it manifests for him in a game, because like the Utah game, for example, I believe was the one that he went scoreless in. Wasn't really one where you noticed specifically, but you did notice on the other end was that it was one of those weird nights where he actually wasn't getting the better of his matchup in one-on-one when it came to defending Donovan Mitchell. A couple bad foul calls on him, to be honest, but still Mitchell was getting better of him. So then on the night, he's just not a net positive, which is insane and almost never ever happens for him in a game. So something to keep an eye on for sure. But is there anything else from these three games, Kevin? I mean, I mentioned the bench performance. I think we talked about Cam Johnson last week or 2 weeks ago, starting to get much more back to kind of what I was talking about before. And we saw it in the Utah game, even talked about it, I think, last week. That's the type of performances you can get out of him. Those guys were just out of their minds last night.
Yeah, I don't have anything other than just I feel like they're still fighting the human nature of when you play the Rockets and the Rockets let you just tee up from three. You just don't play defense on the other end. But when they've had to play defense or nights against bad teams, when they're clicking, it's been really good.
Yeah, definitely. We wanted to talk about the Suns at the Open, but definitely the biggest news that has happened in the past week since we last podcasted in the world revolving around the Suns and certainly the NBA was Jamal Murray tearing his ACL. I wrote about this briefly in the West Watch. Just really awful when something like that specifically happens in that sort of situation, because Denver can look at their roster and see how young it is and look at, like, this is not the only year they're going to be able to contend, but you just look at how the stars aligned for them with Jokic being a front runner for the MVP, with the way the Aaron Gordon trade was available for them. They were able to execute it, and the way that they were looking as a team with Aaron Gordon, just like getting Michael Porter Jr. the way that they did in the draft, like everything sort of was kind of adding up for them to have like a run where they were contenders this year. And then for it to happen like this is just really brutal and obviously, unfortunately, drops Denver from contender status, in my opinion.
Yeah, it's honestly like the Clippers are coming on. Obviously, the Nuggets were doing great. That was the team where you would hope, I think, as a Suns fan, you say, okay, the Suns are kind of where Denver was last year. They have the stars, they have the firepower, they have the depth, and they just needed that experience. And now you kind of lose an opportunity where you just made an awesome trade that seems to be working out really well there in Gordon. You got the stacked roster. You maybe lost Torrey Craig, but after that, it's pretty much the same team. And yeah, I it'll be interesting to see. I still think they're a really good team, but I think that does kind of tick them down into the next tier. As far as contenders go,
it does for sure. And you teased it there. We're going to kind of run through, we each kind of spent like honestly less than 5 minutes going through the Western Conference standings at the 1-10 spot. And we're including the Pelicans because it looks like for now, if you've been reading ArizonaSports.com lately, which I hope you have been, where I've been updating the Western Conference standings every Tuesday, going through each team 1-10, what's going on with them lately. It looks like it's going to be an 11-team race. The Warriors are at 26-28. Right below them are the Pelicans at 25-29. But then the Kings have lost seven straight, and they're now four games back of Golden State. So it's starting to look more and more like it's just going to be those teams. So we took those 10 other teams outside of the Suns and kind of broke them into tiers in terms of I hope, well, I didn't even say this, Kevin, but like at the top, obviously the teams that they would fear the most, that we would fear the most if we were the Suns, and then going all the way down from there. And something I wanted to mention there on the standings look right now, Suns are a game and a half out from the Jazz. If you're looking at last 10 games, they are the only team in the NBA that is 9-1 in their last 10. And then there are only two other teams in the league right now who are 8-2 in their last 10. That is the Clippers and the Nuggets right behind them, Kevin. Now, the Nuggets are probably going to drop a little bit, but the Clippers are only two games back of them, and they are certainly going to have to think there is going to be a battle there for the two seed, and you can't help but look at that as a potential second-round series between those two teams and how important home court could wind up being for either of those teams. Clippers have won six straight. So let's run through these tiers right now. I've got the Lakers in their own tier at the top. Do you disagree? Are you one of those Jazz heads out there, Kevin? Are you going to try and throw the Jazz in there?
I am not a Jazz head, but I will say, I mean, there's an asterisk on that Lakers thing because I think there is like a 5% chance like LeBron and AD come back and something's not right as far as just fitting pieces together and that kind of thing, or just, you know, there's a room for a speed bump there, but also I think that would be gone by the time the Suns would face any of these teams. So yeah, they're alone in my own top tier.
Woj's latest was that Anthony Davis was set to return somewhere in like late April. So not this week, the week of the, I believe that would be the 12th. I think it's the week of the 19th is what he was looking at specifically. So next week sometime. And then LeBron at the start of May. So season ends in the third week of May, I believe. So that will give them a couple of weeks to get right. I agree with you that there definitely is a little bit of a chance. But with that being said, I think they are the most terrifying matchup. It's quite obvious just with the precedence they hold from last season, being the championship team that they were. I think that there certainly is a point where at the beginning of this season, I looked at the pieces that they added and absolutely loved them. It hasn't come to fruition like that. Montrezl Harrell is looking like more like last year Montrezl Harrell than 2, 3, 4 years ago Montrezl Harrell, when we were really excited about him, sixth man of the year, all that kind of stuff. And of course, like, he won sixth man of the year last year, but just how he looked like a guy you couldn't keep out there. And that was kind of less of the case, but teams have just started to pick on him more, and it's just started to become more difficult to play him. Schroeder has been kind of inconsistent for them. But with that being said, the pieces around them, I think they've added like a little bit of enough around there. I actually think that Drummond is kind of important for them to add in terms of just minutes, at least because of Gasol's inconsistencies for them. They've still got LeBron. They've still got AD.
The Drummond ad was huge for me, just if you're looking at it from a Suns perspective, because I think just having that body to at least have minutes where like DA is not just, you know, the biggest dude on the court, I think matters to some degree. You're not going to roll with Drummond like the entire time, but I think that was low-key a big thing if the Suns ever faced them.
And Gasol, that's the thing where Gasol too slow, Harrell too small. Like they just didn't have a big that could match up with him. And Drummond, at least physically and athletically, if you think of Drummond as like this big bulky guy who grabs a bunch of rebounds, he's actually a really athletic dude. If you've never catched a Pistons game, I don't blame you, Kev. If you haven't seen much Andre Drummond,
on the Cavs Pilots.
Oh, who could forget? Who could forget that tenure? So for me, Kevin, this is the way I did it. I basically put like a extra gap. So if you want to say there's a tier two for me, I don't have any teams in it, just to emphasize for me that there's a big gap for me between the Lakers and any other team. Right now, the most interesting thing to watch, and I think the thing the Suns fans should be watching for the most right now, Kevin, is the results for those two LA teams, because the Lakers are only, and I say only, they're only 3.5 games back of the Clippers for the 3 seed. And that is with the Clippers winning 6 straight recently. The Lakers without AD, without LeBron, they've been stringing these wins together. They got one in Charlotte last night. They got their win of the season in Brooklyn, where they hit a bunch of threes and like Ben McLemore had 17. It was just a crazy win for them. They had one against Toronto, and then they had another one before that where they're just like they're staying around 500 during this stretch. And if the Clippers have this stretch where they lose 4 of 6 or all of a sudden, and then AD and LeBron are back and they get hot at the end of the year, you could be looking at a run where the Lakers get to the 3 seed up there. And then, of course, Denver, they're only a half game back of Denver. I think that like looking at the Lakers as a top 4 seed is now pretty comfortable to say. But of course, the Suns, you either want to, I guess that's the way you want to look at it, where you are in the 2 or the 1 seed. It's like, I don't think you want the 1 seed if the Lakers are going to be in the 4 seed, which is something that we're going to be talking about a lot more. If you want to look at those 18 games left in the season, we're going to check back in after 9 more games and kind of see where these standings are at. And we'll be talking about it every week. But I think you certainly want to avoid the Lakers in the second round if you can control it at all, Kevin. For me, that second tier, though, to go there, I've got the Clippers and the Jazz. That's it. I don't have the Nuggets there. We'll talk about them in a little bit, but not willing to put the Mavericks or the Blazers up there. And I think that that's like a pretty comfortable, that's where I still have like quite a lot of fear in terms of like the Suns could potentially lose to these teams. Like I think the Lakers, it would be hard for me to imagine a situation if the Lakers are what we think they are for the most part. I would pick the Suns to beat them. Clippers and Jazz, it would really depend on how I'm feeling that day. But that's certainly a situation where I think the Suns could be presented a lot of problems against either of those teams. Do you agree on those two? Do you have anyone else in there?
So I do have a tier two, and I have the Clippers in their own, just because they seem like they've clicked. And like that game they played the Suns, they looked really good to me. Plus, I saw a stat today that said, I believe they and the Nets are the only teams who have ever had like a offensive rating in the half court of 104 or above 104 or something like that.
Wow.
That's concerning when you talk playoffs, things slow down a bit. Obviously the Suns are a good defensive team, but that's just an interesting note because that's a big deal when you talk playoffs. So I think they have an edge over my tier three is Jazz and Nuggets. Cause I guess I'm down on the Jazz more than most people and probably still high on the Nuggets despite Murray's injury. Just because I think they have enough to at least get, you know, a series in or something like that and maybe figure things out soon. I don't know if they have enough ball handlers. Like you brought it up in your West Watch story. I just think that there's still enough talent there where if you can trust Michael Porter Jr. to go crazy a few times, you know, stuff like that. I don't know if that's a good thing, but I'm going to still give him credit because I still think that's a good team.
So I this is where I started looking at like matchup wise, a lot of it. And for me, I'm actually with you on the Jazz. I'm very low on the Jazz. I think at some point in the season I sent, our buddy from the Timeline Podcast, I think I sent both of them a DM. It was like, hot take, like I'm more scared of the Mavericks than the Jazz or something. Or something to that extent. It was either the Mavericks or the Blazers. And they're like, wow, that's crazy. And I'm like, yeah, I know. I don't want to say it anywhere, though. Because I just wasn't even scared of the Jazz really at all a couple weeks ago from a Suns perspective. But that game, I'm probably influenced by a bit too much because I thought that the Suns were playing really, 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 really good. Like maybe the best that they've played all season. I know they won the game, Kevin, but The Jazz were there the entire time. They did not go away once. They didn't go down 15 or 18 and then go on a run to bring it back. It was nothing like that. They just kept hanging around. And then if I'm looking at it from a matchup perspective, I would really like to think that the problem that Monty presented them from a chess match standpoint of we're going to play in deep drop, you're going to take these off the dribble threes, take these mid-range jumpers, I'd like to believe that Utah would start to find some solutions for that. It doesn't seem like that complex of a thing to figure out. That's stuff I'm very elementary at, to be fair, and I don't act like I have a great schematic understanding of the league, and I like to not necessarily plead ignorance, but more like respect the opinions of the people who do it for a living professionally Look at that stuff every day. But Utah has a lot of things going for them in the matchup. I think that Bojan is someone who has popped in both games from a matchup perspective where the Suns just don't have a guy that can really guard him. Because he's too strong for Mikal, he's too quick for Jay, and then he can also like finish through DA at the rim. We've seen that a couple of times. And then you just look at their lineup across the way. If you look at the benches starting to come in, like that's where Jordan Clarkson is. Like he's probably the best player on the floor when you look at the benches against each other. Favors is someone who comes in against Saric, and obviously there are stylistic matchups there that can favor certain ways. But they match across the way. Like Conley is obviously worse than Chris Paul, but you've got a heady, very good point. I thought Conley was fantastic in that game, by the way, in the game a couple weeks ago. And then obviously Mitchell and Booker, you got Ingles, O'Neal is a really interesting variable in it. And then Gobert and DeAndre. I just think that they match up way too well for me to look down on them as a team overall. I really would be absolutely shocked if they got out of the West just because of how much they rely on the three and the way that they do. Because I think they rely on the three in a way where when they get in close games, I really don't think they can just bet on playoff Donovan Mitchell to bail them out of every single one, because I think that's what they're going to have to do. And we saw it in some stretches of that closing time where Mitchell was like taking terrible shots, but also hitting insane shots as well. He's a really great player, especially in those moments. But that's my whole spiel on the Jazz. That's kind of why I respect them still. And I just think that watching them over the course of the year, catching a lot more games in the past 6 weeks from them, there's a certain amount of resiliency where that's the key word that, and the catchphrase and all that kind of stuff. That's been a word that Monty has used over and over again with the Suns team. And I think the Jazz have a certain amount of that in them too. And that would just present problems, I think, for the Suns. Where do you like them less, I guess, in terms of looking at them a tier lower?
Yeah. And to be clear, my Jazz Nuggets tier three is kind of where I'm like, this is a toss up of the Suns tier, I guess you could say. I do think the Suns could come out of that series maybe more favorably than most. But like you said, I think just the limitations of Utah's offense, where it's either leaning on Donovan Mitchell, or if you blitz the crap out of him, then it's like, I think the Suns could do enough, you know, communicating, chasing guys off the 3-point line, where they don't have, like, Ingles is a great decision maker and passer, but he's not like going to break down the offense.
No.
So I guess that's where I'm kind of not trusting Utah as much, just in terms of they don't have another Donovan Mitchell. Mike Conley has not, I guess I haven't watched him that much, but he just doesn't seem to still have that, you know, ability more to break down offense or defenses better than, you know, being chased off the line. So I think that could go in favor of Phoenix. And like you said, I don't think you want to rely on that type of offense. It seems like a little too much. So I guess that's where their weakness is. And again, 3-point shooting teams have gone deep in the playoffs, but when you get into a good defensive series, I would rather take, you know, book Chris Paul pick and roll stuff, creating things over that, I'd say.
So Donovan Mitchell's averaging 26.5 points per game for them. He's kind of like having a pretty awesome year when you pull it up and stuff. I think like I'm someone who's always been lower on his game than most. And like I find myself sometimes being like, gosh, he's still really good. Like I just don't think he's like a top 10, top 15 guy yet, but that doesn't matter. Like I shouldn't let that look past the fact that he's still really good. If you had to guess, Kevin, who their second leading scorer is, who would you say?
Oh, man. I don't think it's Boyan this year, is it?
It's not.
Okay. I don't know, man.
It's Jordan Clarkson.
Oh, God. Yeah.
He's averaging 17.2 a game. Who do you think's their third leading scorer?
Rudy?
It's Mike Conley, 16.5 a game. Okay. Boyan is fourth at 15.2, which surprised me a little bit. And I think that my pick for the Jazz is, or not my pick for the Jazz, but me putting the Jazz that high, I think Boyan's averaging at least like 20 a game in that series. I think he like becomes a huge X factor in that series, and they look for him a little bit more. Rudy's at 14.4. And then to your point on Joe Ingles, 12 points a game. He takes, let me see, he takes 7.8 shots a game. He takes under 8 shots a game. And then Royce O'Neal, next leading scorer, 6.8. So I think that if you are someone who is very high on the Suns' bench, I think a reason to also look higher on them than the Jazz is kind of what we saw last night, where you look at the ability for Cam Johnson to kind of get hot in some games, Campaign, Dario. I don't know if you want to include Torrey Craig in like a scoring category necessarily, but they've got more firepower off the bench offensively for sure. Jordan Clarkson on his own is a lot, but after him, it's really not that much. There's Ingles there, obviously, but like you said, in terms of offensive creation and scoring, it's more of just like offensive fluidity that he brings more than anything else. The Clippers are just, I agree with you, Kevin. I think that the Nuggets are a team we'll talk about in a minute, but them and the Clippers are the two teams where I think I might move them around a little bit more. The Clippers have had some moments this season where they've just looked like rather bluntly, like the pretenders that some people always have felt like they were. There have been moments this season where we've seen that team, and I'm not just talking about the one game sample size where they got blown up by 60 or whatever. They've had stretches during the season, but people were talking about the other night, like when their offense is going, it's pretty ridiculous. And the thing that worries me about a matchup with them, Kevin, and I think the way that you were phrasing it there, is that you would probably ultimately pick the Clippers in a series against the Suns if you had to. And they just don't have – Mikal has not been able to guard Paul George or Kawhi Leonard effectively so far. And two people who have loved Mikal Bridges since I first saw him play at Villanova and have thought he was an excellent defender then, think he's an excellent defender now. Sometimes there's just bad matchups, and for whatever reason – and I think there are reasons, like the bulky wings and ball handlers, like it, especially the bigger they get, tend to give him trouble. I know he's had good matchups against Kawhi and good matchups against Paul George, but over the course of a 6-7 game series, we've seen it this year, they don't have guys who can guard them. Like maybe Jay has like a huge kind of series like he did against Milwaukee against Giannis, and he can be the guy who you stick on Kawhi potentially, but that's kind of what it comes down to for me, is that Clippers team, you talk about half court offense, Paul George has eviscerated them in both games. Their ability to shoot from three, Sam Cooper had the stat the other day where I believe it was 9 guys on their team shoot at least 40% from the corners. They're the best 3-point shooting team in the league. The Suns don't allow a lot of breakdowns like that, of course, but that's where you can run into trouble. So many. And the thing for me, Kevin, is I hate to say this because there are certain players on their team where it screams inconsistency, and it's like, am I scared of Nick Batum, Kevin? I'm not scared of Nick Batum, but what I am scared of is the fact that Nick Batum, Marcus Morris, Ibaka, Reggie Jackson, Rondo, Patrick Beverley, Kennard is the only guy on that roster who hasn't like had moments yet. All of those guys have had like a handful of them in playoff series, and the experience is just overwhelming that they have.
It's more how they play to me, how they play with so many wings. Like you said, Batum's not like scary at all to you when you just say how good is Nick Batum, but what he does to that team is it causes, you have to make decisions with matchups. And I think that's really just emphasizing, like, okay, Mikal doesn't match up with your two best wings. Does he match up against Batum? Does he match up more against the guards? Like, those things kind of matter. And again, we're looking at one game sample size against the Jazz and the Suns, against the Suns and the Clippers. But like, Rondo looked good, and he actually added something. And I didn't think that made sense when they traded him and flipped Lou Will, but that, I kind of saw it there. I was like, oh, okay. You're going to make like Paul George more rested at the end of the games. Great. Okay. I get it now. That's fair.
You're going to like make Campaign not really a thing. Oh, okay.
Yeah.
All right. I get it.
Now that was Thursday night Rondo, but yeah.
Yeah. Primetime Rondo. Shout out to Primetime Rondo, far inferior to playoff Rondo. But again, we're talking about the playoffs, playoff Rondo. that's a DeAndre series too, right, Kevin? Where not only you need him to do to be better than Zubac, but what if they go small like they did at the end of that game before? And then if they go small, I think you kind of want DeAndre to be out there because wings against wings and stuff, Kevin, like you said, there's so many options. Like they can beat you in a lot of, and you just don't have, that's where I kind of go back to the beginning of my answer. It's just like, they don't have a guy who can effectively, the hope is Crowder on Kawhi and Mikal on George. I think that Devin at times has actually been better on Paul George than Mikal has been. He wasn't bad.
I'd rather not have that though.
And then you know what's bad, Kevin, is when you start going, should they start Torrey Craig in a playoff series against them? That's when you're probably running out of answers. Don't do that. Like, Torrey Craig's great. We love Torrey Craig, but no, that's where you start running into issues. Let's run through this second group a little bit quicker here. I'm talking to myself mainly. The Mavericks, Blazers, and Nuggets are the next three for me. I have them in that order, but honestly, I don't know. I have the Nuggets low just because I want to see the next couple of weeks and see how they redo their offense, basically. They have Jokic, Kevin, but the amount of – I've tried to, like, really hammer this home in those posts for Westwatch. Like, they have Campazzo and Monte Morris who do not score – and those are their other guards. That's it. Will Barton's a wing. PJ Dozier's a wing. Michael Porter Jr. is a wing. Aaron Gordon is a wing. That's it. That's all they have. So I don't know how they create their offense in a way where it's not going to be like as good, obviously, but the factors of Porter and Gordon have the potential at least to score and make up for the scoring. And where I could see them potentially moving up all the way to that second tier for me with the Clippers and the Jazz is the matchup and size, Kevin, because they have a lot of it. So if they just really become a team that's rebounding everything and just becomes a team where size is a real issue to play against them, because, man, they've got Jokic, they've got Millsap, they've got Green, they've got McGee. And then if you look at those wings again, the size of Gordon and the size of Porter – it's not that the Suns don't have anyone that can guard those guys and match up with both those guys from like a physical athleticism standpoint. No other team really has guys like that. Porter 6'10", 6'11", long, quick. Gordon is 6'8", strong, also quick. It's those guys don't – you don't find those guys in a lot of different places.
Bull playoff minutes too. Bull playoff.
I love it. And by the way, Nikola Jokic might be the MVP. So like, I'm probably putting them too low right now, but I'm just pessimistic until we see them play without Murray.
Blazers? Do you trust the Blazers?
Yeah. Are you shook about either of those teams? I think people should be a little bit more nervous about the Mavericks than they're willing to let on. I see things on the timeline saying they'll wash the Mavs either way. And
I think Luka, I mean, it's kind of the same thing as Jokic, right? Like, I don't want to just dump on them because when you have an MVP type player like Luka, it's like, what if he goes wild against you? But I don't know. I think for the Suns specifically, I think that team's pretty good, but I just don't. The Suns have been pretty good against them of late, right? Like, I'm trying to think of the last time they really had a problem with that team.
They've been able to neutralize Luka in the matchups, and I think that's where I ultimately come back to like them not really being that much of an issue necessarily. Something that I've been keeping an eye on is them since the All-Star break, and in the 19 games they are seventh in offensive rating, which is not where I thought that they would. It's not where they need to be in order for me to start to get more scared of them, because I think that them getting back to what they were last year, which was the league's number one offense, is something I talked about in my first post on them, and just kind of looking at them after the break. Now, defensive rating, they're ninth. So that's where it gets kind of interesting, because now their defense is kind of middling enough to where if their offense is great, there's starting to be something there from a matchup standpoint. They've got Finney Smith, who they've thrown on Paul in the past, which was kind of meh. They've got Richardson, who at least like antagonizes Booker in like a Royce O'Neal fashion. Certainly doesn't limit him as much as someone like on the Clippers would, like George or Leonard. But they have options there. I don't know about the Porzingis thing. And then in terms of bench pop, again, they've got Brunson, who's been a sixth man of the year candidate this year. That Redick is eventually going to be a piece for them. I think they've got a little bit there. That's why I have them over the Blazers, who I've been preaching to people all year to take them more seriously just because it's Damian Lillard. But also, they've still got a negative point differential, Kevin. They've got the second worst defense in the league, I believe. And at a certain point, you're just not worried about a team like that in a series. And plus, the Suns have just – they haven't played them with CJ, I believe. Maybe at the start of the year they did. But in the last two meetings, they did not. And –
Does Nurk scare you at all as far as starting to get back to where he's like kind of what he was?
And if he
causes a problem, yeah.
If he does, but that's the thing is that like he hasn't yet, and he hasn't gotten back to that form where he was. I mean, he was amazing. I think it was the play-in game, right, against Memphis, where he was just incredible. And he had some moments in the postseason as well. And I think everyone knows how good he can be, but he just hasn't been, he's been what, like 70-80% of himself from what I can tell for the most part. And looking at those post All-Star break numbers again, they're fourth in offense, Portland is, but their defense, they're 27th. So if you're looking for some sort of, they found a way to get through their defensive woes or sort of some sort of angle like that, where their defense has had a breakthrough. It's not the case, and it's still 29th in the league. 116.1 defensive rating, which adds up to a negative 0.2 net rating. Because even if their offense is sixth in the league, they still have a negative net rating. And that stuff just, it's been, we're now 75% of the way into the season, Kevin. I think that just matters a bit too much. You even willing to like talk yourself into like the Warriors being an issue? Just too much smoke over there, Kevin. You can hardly see over there.
Is that a oh man. No, I don't think Steph's gonna shoot them into a threatening position. Just too many things wrong. Spurs, no. Pelicans, sorry, Zion. That's not going great. Yeah. I have the Grizzlies with the Mavs, honestly, in a fifth tier. And then I have Warriors, Pelicans, Spurs. I think the Grizzlies, like, can steal a few games. Maybe that's, like, not fair to the Mavs to have them in there. But, yeah.
So, I've got that fourth tier, Mavericks, Blazers, Nuggets, fifth tier. I've got the Warriors and the Spurs. The Warriors, for me, I just wonder what happens if they throw Draymond at the five at the start of game one and just what happens. Kerr's got some nonsense up his sleeve. I don't know. I don't know what happens. But with that being said, I would still, that's like the only reason I have them higher, because they've just been a disaster in a lot of different ways this year. And the team just hasn't clicked together in the way that I thought it looked like it might be when Draymond came back, and they got about two weeks into the season. It was like, oh man, like, are they going to be top six? And it just has not come together at all. Steph's averaging 40 a game right now in April, Kevin. So you should be scared of that man regardless. But I also think that the Suns are just, not only are they a really good defensive team, I think that they should get more credit this year for how good of a defensive team they've been, specifically with the fact that they've gone with certain game plans for certain nights. There was the first game against Utah, and then the second game against the Utah, where they used like this, a similar sort of thing. But Jay Crowder said after that first Utah game, we came up with something, not that they came up with something, but they worked through something in shoot around that morning and then used it that night. And it was one of the worst offensive games that Jazz had all year. So I think they would be able to figure out Steph in a certain way. They would beat him up over the course of a series, and it wouldn't really be that close. I got the Spurs right below them just because they're the Spurs. Respect it until it's completely dead. It's not completely dead yet. And then I've got another tier below that, Grizzlies, Pelicans. Grizzlies just don't have experience, Kevin. I think they're a team where they would be a little bit more plucky to me if they had playoff experience across their roster, but they just don't really have any. I think the Suns would actually be
healthy. Yeah.
Well, I think the Suns have more experience regardless, right? Like, is Jonas probably saw a couple series with Toronto? And is there anyone else I'm forgetting? Kyle Anderson, those Spurs years?
Yeah. I'm trying to think who's on there.
You think off the top of their head, their three best players, you would say Ja, obviously, he hasn't seen a series yet. Jaren Jackson Jr., no. And then Dylan Brooks, no. Brandon Clark, Grayson Allen, D'Anthony Melton, Desmond Bane. Justice Winslow got some peaks with Miami, I guess. But they just don't have the
Yeah,
they just don't have the experience. And then Pelicans, I have at the last, just because they're not a good team. I don't really care about the Zion thing. They're a mess.
They are a mess. It's too bad.
You know what's fun? When the game has 90 seconds left and they're down by one and Brandon Ingram has the ball and Zion doesn't. They got some stuff to figure out, man. I don't know. It's obvious what you do there. You build the team around Zion and you move Ingram, but who's taking Ingram? A lot of teams would like Brandon Ingram, but how does that work?
Stan Van.
Making things happen. God bless him.
I don't know.
So after just like concluding it, Kevin, after talking about it, how confident do you feel in the Suns in the postseason right now in terms of their chances to, I guess what people want to hear is their chances to make the finals. But for us, I think it's more of making the Western Conference finals. I think we're a tier below everyone in terms of expectations, but I think the Nuggets thing changed everything, and I think that they've got a much better chance of making it two rounds deep now. To the third round.
That's why it matters when we reconvene in a little bit here after a few more games, because the seeding's going to mess things up, where if the Lakers are still far down there, I don't feel great about getting out of the second round, you know, depending on who they're playing. I feel pretty good about them getting out of the first round right now, though. I think that's something, if we look at expectations and we make them realistically, yeah, they should get out of the first. I don't know about the second, though. That's TBD, as they say.
Yeah, there's been a kind of been sitting there waiting and seeing if the Mavericks, it looked like the Mavericks were, they were one of the hottest teams in the league coming out of the break, and then they've kind of slowed down in the past week or two. The Blazers, same thing. You're looking at those teams, and you were looking at the Nuggets, too, and then the Nuggets turned out to be that team, right, that was on the up and up, too. So then they turn into that third team outside of the Lakers where it's like Clippers, Jazz, Nuggets, where those are three teams you feel like would bring like a very competitive series out of them. And of course, the beauty of math, Kevin, add them with the Suns and that's four teams. So you could have avoided either way. You were going to, if those four teams wound up as the top four seeds, you were going to avoid them. But not how it works. It is how it works now even more because the Nuggets are probably going to drop down. Oh no, I worded that completely wrong. I'm so stupid, Kevin. What I meant to say was
so hard on yourself.
What I meant to say is here's how math works. There would have been four other teams that the Suns were you were potentially looking at could really challenge the Suns in the first round. You had Lakers, Clippers, Jazz, Nuggets. One of those teams was going to be at the five. So you look at that and say, like, oh, if they somehow wind up at the four and they get the five, you know what I mean? Like, they could potentially lose in the first round. But the teams that are going to be at, like, six, seven, eight, you weren't really worried about. But now with the Nuggets dropping, there's only three teams, like I said. So if the Suns stay in the top four, which they very, very likely will, it would be an enormous downfall for them to not have that happen. I just can't see them. That's kind of where my expectations are at. I agree with you. Definitely making it out of the first round, and then it's just the matchup we'll see and how these teams look in a month.
Mostly just avoid the Clippers is what I'm saying. I would like to think that they want to avoid the Clippers.
The only team they haven't beaten outside of they beat Charlotte on the second go. Brooklyn, I believe Brooklyn is the team that they've got to get back, but or Denver as well. Did they beat Denver on the? I think they've got Denver coming up again.
Denver.
The only team that they've lost to and then they haven't beaten again. Yeah, they beat Denver early in the season. Actually, that's my fault. But their losses are to Sacramento, who they beat. Clippers, they beat. Detroit, they came back and beat. Washington, they came back and beat. Memphis, they beat. Oklahoma City, they beat. Pelicans, beat them. Brooklyn, no. Charlotte, yes. Indiana, yes. Minnesota, yes. Orlando, I think they've got to go back for Orlando a second time. Nope, they beat Orlando earlier.
They don't see Orlando in the playoffs.
So there's your fun little nugget. The Clippers and the Nets are the only two teams that they've lost to and they haven't come back and beaten yet, which adds a little bit more fun to that Brooklyn game. They've got Thursday, they play Sacramento. Saturday, San Antonio. Two kind of sleeper games, in my opinion, that could be fun. But then the real fun that we've been talking about now in this part of the podcast for a couple of weeks now. Milwaukee, Philly, Boston, Brooklyn, and the Knicks over the course of 8 days on the road out east. And then, hi, welcome back home. Now you get the Clippers and the Jazz again. So, this schedule, it's amusing sometimes. You know what's not amusing, Kevin, is watching Madison Bumgarner pitch. Holy Toledo. Who's a bigger flop, him or Brandon Knight? Me and Vince talked about this walking into the building for 2 minutes, and I was like, Brandon Knight, you were just like, okay, even if it doesn't work out in terms of him being like your all-star guard in the future or whatever with potential and upside, blah, 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 you just bring him off the bench and he can score like 14 a game off the bench. Like his skill set caters perfectly to that. It's like, no, he's just not an NBA player anymore. You sign Madison Bumgarner, give it Madison Bumgarner $85 million. That wasn't the thinking, of course. You want him to be the ace. But I mean, like this year, you're like, okay, well, can he just be like at least like the third or fourth best starter on the team? It's like, no,
I'm going to go Mad Bum on that one because do you remember that he had a rodeo alias and then the pandemic hit and we just forgot about that was a thing? Should have been a red flag. Seems like it was a red flag that we just
talked
about.
Are you saying that he fell in love with the rodeo game too much and it cost him his career?
You know what they say about the rodeo game. Once you do the rodeo, you can't not do the rodeo. I don't know.
I thought you were going to say, you know what they say about the rodeo game and then just not say anything. And that's how and then I was not going to say anything and we were going to end the podcast there, but the moment is gone. You went for it though. I respect it. God bless you, D-backs fans out there. Stay strong. We'll be back next week.